yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So welcome to the football show. No hurling. Absolutely no mention of hurling on this show whatsoever. So we're back on the exclusive football show. And I want to start it by giving Carla Whitey a shout out, who made it to the Sigerson final last night. A great Port Leash man, Pat Critchley, is their manager, to make it even extra special. A nice little blend of Leash players, Carlow players, Kildare players and Wexford players. I was looking through their team. No huge stars or anything like that. Not sure, I'm not going to mention UCD, Ger. Ger Brennan's here it. And Connor is here. What happened there? The Dublin Derby.
Dublin Derby, great game over the last couple of seasons, Willie. This particular occasion, our guys were fatigued from, we would have gone to two extra time periods against St Mary's of Belfast the last day,
right,
and then against UU Jordanstown the previous week. So that definitely influenced the way our fellas were feeling.
Did you pick up injuries along the way?
We picked up a couple of injuries. Well, Con
obviously
a notable loss in the warm up for the UUJ game. But in fairness to the lads, everyone who came in stood up and added value to the whole setup, and we got through those two matches. But DCU were the better team on the day.
Yeah, because I looked through both teams, and it's not like they had that strong a much stronger a team on paper. You still have a pretty strong team on paper there, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And look, we would have kind of fancied our chances going into the game. Again, over the years, it's been kind of 50-50 between both colleges, and this particular occasion, anyone who was at the game or watching it was fairly evident early on that DCU were just kind of hopping off the ground, and everything they were trying was coming off quite well for them. And we've all been on teams where you just have those days and just meant to be. And
yeah,
and this particular occasion, it wasn't meant to be, but better team won. Great to see IT Carlow do well.
Do you give them a chance against them? There's no stars really on that Carlow team.
And quite often that can be beneficial to a college setup, because you're not chasing the big guy coming back from club or from county.
Right.
And fellas are playing with each other the whole time during the league, and that bit of a spirit and bond develops, and they have their few nights out, and then fellas are playing for something bigger than themselves. And
it's like a club team.
It's like a club team. So they had a great victory down in IT Tralee. A star-studded IT Tralee team in the first round. Nobody gave them a chance. Did a great fixture. That was a not UL, sorry.
UCC,
yeah. Sorry, who are obviously defending champions. Nobody expected them to beat UCC, and it was probably 50-50 going into the Letterkenny IT game. Letterkenny would have won the Trench Cup last season, so their first time up playing Sigerson. So
It was funny. Letterkenny drew in the last minute. Got a goal in the last minute to draw it 1-9 all, and then IT Carlow went down to score a goal.
I saw the video.
It was a fisted goal.
Yeah.
I was like, "What was he thinking, going for a goal? You fisted over." That's the one occasion I will allow you fisted over the bar.
Yeah, yeah. Again, fair play to them. It's on in DCU the final next Wednesday evening. DCU will obviously have a bit of home advantage. It's a super pitch, lovely setup that you have in DCU too, and you'd both have to go with the bigger college on this occasion. But then, given who Carlow have bet and the way they finished off that game against Letterkenny IT, you have to give them a chance. So let's see how it goes.
Yeah, so best of luck to Carlow IT. Well, we'll probably mention it. We won't be able to mention it if it's next Wednesday. So best of luck to them. Hope they can do it. It's a weird one this weekend, lads, because the big game is Dublin-Kerry. That's on Air Sport at 7:15. And the only other football game that I could see that was on television is clashing with that. It's Donegal Mayo. Connor, I'm sure you'll be watching that one. Mm-hmm. But there's three hurling games on. There's one on air before Dublin Kerry. It's Limerick Tip, which is a big game. And then TG Catter have two hurling games that I could see on Sunday. One is live at 2 and the other is deferred at 4. And I was thinking, the hurling league is a dead duck. It's unimportant. Like, it's almost like a warm-up competition. And the Gaelic Football League this year, it's dog eat dog, lads. This is tier two on the horizon. So for Division 2 teams, which Leash is part of, it's squeaky bum time, and Division 3 teams is squeaky bum time. So, and we know the Division 4 teams take it very, very seriously, always in the league. So I'm wondering, like, I mean, there should definitely be more of a TV focus on Gaelic football this year.
Yeah, but best of luck telling the hurling teams that the hurling league is a dead duck.
I'll be telling them. I'll be doing a hurling show. Like, but honestly, this time last year, it's all, look, we're not going to get into hurling analysis here, but I'll be talking to the lads about that because, like, Westmeath are in one division and they're going down. So all other five teams are in a comfort zone. Do you know, and then they have another league in the summer. So yeah, they have a league and another league. So, like, I mean, this league is just a warm-up league to the more important league. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, I do think this year especially with so much riding on Division 2 and 3, like, this is Tier 2, you're gone.
Yeah, but I suppose, like, hurling fans might feel their start of action if they get no TV, like, in the next couple of months. But you make an interesting point about Division 2 and 3 there, because I knew, obviously, Tier 2 Championship was coming, but it was only when I looked at the makeup of the divisions today that it kind of became clear to me how much is at stake. Because I was looking at, like, obviously, if you don't reach a provincial final, you get relegated. Well, then you're going to be in the Tier 2. And just like for Laois and Westmeath, for example, in Division 2, they both have to beat Dublin if they get to a provincial final, so they can't go down. Armagh have to beat Donegal. I would say Armagh would stay in Division 2, but if they were in threat of relegation, they have to beat Donegal or Tyrone to get through the provincial final. Roscommon, again, I think they're safe, but they'd have to beat Mayo. So, like, that comes into the equation for loads of different teams. And, like, that's going to make... That's like, Division 1 is obviously going to be where the elite are going to play, but, like, in terms of the excitement, it's going to be in Division 2 and 3 where the stakes are absolutely massive.
Yeah, so we'll finally see a bit of maybe championship intensity, the whole Wicklow League, Ger, traditionally in the league, and it's nearly always the way when I was playing, and even since I've played, it's the last two league games that are almost championship intensity, aren't they? That's when you take a week break and you come back, and this is when we get serious.
And it is, and as a player, maybe you're established fully, or you're trying to peak and come championship, you're always focusing those last couple of games of the National League to get your body right and to make sure that you're in the manager's eye line when he's coming to picking the first 15 for the first championship round. I think the last couple of seasons, even the last 10 seasons, come back to, I know Pat Gilroy took over, he put a massive emphasis on the National League, primarily from a psychological perspective, that we'd taken so many hammerings off Tyrone and Kerry and one or two others, that it was time to start trying to beat these teams in the National League and generate a bit of momentum from that. So yeah. From our perspective going back then, that was our starting point, and we needed to kind of beat these teams, and we had a great victory down in Fitzgerald Stadium. I think it was the first time winning in Kerry since 1974 or 5 or something like that, and the rest is obviously history since in terms of the Dublin-Kerry rivalry over the last 10 years. But
you think that was a turning point in it?
Oh yeah. No, absolutely it was a turning point, because they had walloped us. It was the season after the start of Learwigs. We lost by 17 points in Galler in quarter final in 9 or 10, I think maybe 2010 in the National League, the first league game or two, that we turned Kerry over in their own backyard, and we took massive confidence from that. And,
right. Little things like that we don't know about when we're previewing games, you don't know what's been said inside a dressing room. You could have been saying, this is as important as an All-Ireland for us here. Yeah. So, like, I mean, you're trying to predict games and you just don't know what... That's the frustrating thing about the league. But I suppose that the point I'm making this year in the league, we will know those 16 teams in 2 and 3. They have to be.
Yeah.
You know, they just simply have to be hitting the ground running.
And they do. And Conor's point is so important. If you're strategising as a team manager of Westmeath or Laois, you're looking at the reality. Are we going to get over Dublin, the Leinster Championship? Probably not this season anyway. So we have to ensure that we are at nearly championship pace come the first league game. I know, reading a couple of Michael Quirk's comments, you know, he's somewhat cagey about the start of the National League, because still kind of pre-season, guys are coming back from colleges after the winter break and pre-season, and little niggles here and there, and there's a bit of nervousness, certainly, listening to Quirk's comments about how Laois may perform, but they're looking to stay up in Division 2, but they have to if they're going to
That's the thing. So
yeah, but the ironic thing about that is that, like, you know, a lot of teams that are in that predicament are probably going to bust their balls during the league because they don't want to be in the Tier 2. But how long are they going to be able to sustain that level? Like, do you know what I mean? So they could bust their balls to make sure they're in Tier 1, and then they could be completely flat by Championship. You know, I'm thinking of Roscommon a couple of years ago when Kevin McStay put all his eggs in staying in Division 1, and by the time they got the Championship, they were absolutely flat. So there's a danger there. There's absolutely a balance that has to be reached between going balls out to make sure you stay in it, but also, like, leaving a little bit in the tank for Championship as well.
But no, and I completely accept that, because, like, I mean, if you're in a dressing room shouting and roaring at the start of February, at the end of January, does that lose its effect then in July when it's really needed? Do you know what I mean? Like, just psychologically, physically, you'll be grand across the year, but psychologically, you'll be like, oh God, is he saying the same? Like, Jesus, I heard that through the league. You know, there has to be, this is the league, and then suddenly Championship. And that was always the thing with Mick O'Dwyer. When Championship came, you saw a different Mick. His whole demeanour was different. It was Championship. There was a spring in his step, and that kind of rubs off on everyone.
It does, and that does still happen. Like, no more than putting your boots on going into a league game or a club league game, it's the same when you come to Championships. There's just something special. You're a bit more edgy going around the house the morning of a game, and then a bit of adrenaline is going that bit early because, again, it's Championship. Nobody remembers who wins the league. It's all about winning that Championship, but the starting point of each team is extremely relevant, and again, it's always what Conor is saying, that depending on if you're Division 2 or 3, if you're matched against a Donegal or Tyrone in your provincial Championship, you have to ensure that you are staying, either getting up to Division 2 or staying in Division 2 when it comes to the end of the National League. But I'd say the way the game has gone now, Willie, you know, you're having your team meetings in December, you're having your team meeting in January, and you're setting your goals and your targets. And, you know, gone are the days of the manager saying, we're going out to do this and this is what we're going to do and you better do it. You have to encourage players to kind of buy in and to come up with their own ideas and plans and say, lads, what would you like to achieve this year? What's realistic for you? And that we're all going together. Now, if somebody, one of the players is off the wall, you got to obviously keep him in check or get rid of him.
But well, I told this story. We're getting sidetracked here now, but I told this story when Justin McNulty took over Laois. This was 2011. Now, we'd gone through 2 years. Sean Dempsey was Laois manager. Hadn't gone well. We'd lost the Tipperary in qualifiers. And I've told this story before, but I'll tell you again. Is we had a meeting and it was that exact thing, Ger. It's like, what are your goals or what are your aspirations? And we get all these answers start coming back. Win the All-Ireland, win the All-Ireland, win the All-Ireland. Now I said, get promoted out of Division 2 and make a Leinster final. That's what I put down. So I start getting tick with all these All-Irelands. I said, let's see, you know how far we're off All-Irelands, right? Yeah. So I lost the head, gave out. And McNulty pulled me up because I didn't have the type of optimism that he wanted or the positivity. I was too negative. And well, I was like, I'm not sure this panel's for me now.
Was there anyone else as realistic as you?
No, I just gave out and nobody really backed that up. Now, was I wrong for saying should we be shooting for the stars or should you have realistic aims?
It's how you package it. So I would certainly be singing from your hymn sheet there. One has to be realistic. Everyone would love to win an All-Ireland if you're from Leitrim or New York or London or wherever. No disrespect to Leitrim or the other teams I mentioned, but they're not going to win an All-Ireland. But it'd be great to win one. So I'm a player, I'm in the dressing room in Division 2 or Division 3 or 4 team. What would I like to improve on myself as a player individually? Is it technical, tactical? Do I want to improve my weak side or tackling? And then as a team, we are in Division 3 or we are in Division 2. It is a realistic and a smart goal to stay in this division or get promoted, and if we get a good run the Championship, that's an added bonus and that'll be a successful year.
Yeah.
And then we'll review next year. But if you're reaching for the stars, it's early fairy stuff, and then it becomes the manager's message then becomes somewhat unauthentic or has less credibility because it's not genuine while he's would like to win an All-Ireland with Laois. I'm sure McNulty would love to win an All-Ireland with Laois based on where you were there and then. It wasn't going to happen anytime soon. Yeah. It was realistic to get to a Leinster final and get promoted in the league.
That was
just
more
the way
realistic.
You said it, Willie.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe it was given out because I was getting frustrated. Now, we were decent in 2011 and it's just coming off the back of such two bad years. I was thinking this is silly stuff. But just there's another thing that just popped into my head. You know the way like you hear a lot of managers saying we want to stay in the division. I'm not sure that's a good goal because at what point, right, you only need 3 wins. Do you say, right, we won't be disappointed if we lose to them? Would you not? I know every team will try to win every game. I just think it's the wrong message to send. Would it not be we want to finish as far up the league as possible? Do you know what I mean? With an ambition of going well in the league, knowing that staying in it should be delighted. But I think staying in it, we want to be third from bottom and then we're happy with that. Do you know? Like, I don't think that's a good message to put out there.
I don't think anyone would state that as an ambition.
I think
they'd be happy with it. Do you know
I've
what I mean?
I've read Cooney from Westmead and Quirk have both said we want to stay in the division.
Okay, right. Well, even the message that they might be getting that out externally, but amongst the group, they could be well be saying like, okay, I say in public that I want to stay in the division, but like secretly in meetings, whatever, behind the scenes, they're saying, I say that, but lads, really, realistically, we want to be finishing as high up the table as we want, because like Jura's on it, but the message there, like, do you know how, like, what sort of reaction is that going to get from the players? Like, geez, that's not particularly ambitious. All we want to do, yeah, is, what if we win three games? Are we happy out? Do you know, won three games, are already set up. What do we do with the other four games? You know, so I think it might be different messaging that they're giving to the public and maybe behind the scenes, but that's just me speculating, I suppose.
Oscar Wilde, I think, said it's better to travel with hope than to arrive, and a lot of these teams will probably have to go game by game. They'd like to be finishing maybe first, second or third of their division, but realistically they probably do have to take it game to game, and if they are staying up, great, and if not...
Well, here's another thing then, the cliche, we're taking it one game at a time, when every team in the country sets goals.
Yeah.
So they're not, are they taking it one game at a time, or do they say, would you like to win the Leinster Championship? No, well, we're taking it one game at a time. If we start looking ahead, then we'll get caught. But you've just looked ahead at the start of the year because you've had your meeting and you've set out your targets for the year.
But they'll say that, and then they'll say after a game, if they have a good performance, well, that was a game we targeted from the get-go.
But you need to have a destination, and then you also have to be honest in your starting points, and then it's putting the little building blocks in place to work towards that. And if you can work towards in a kind of honest and manly and courageous kind of fashion, that in itself is success. And if you're bet by a better team, but if you're caught up in the stars too much, you just lose track of everything, really.
I don't know anyone in the championship that wouldn't think of the next game. Do you know, you imagine going into a game thinking of two games a time? That's, I don't know, just mentally, how would you, maybe you're distracted or you're focused, maybe you're not focused is maybe the best thing. You would be looking at the game, but you're not focused enough. I was going to talk about the advanced mark, lads. I don't think we have time. I thought it was interesting Tyrone played Frank Burns at full forward, because obviously McShane and Matty Donnelly, we'll get into league predictions in part three. It'll be interesting to see. One thing I was interested in wondering was, will we see a return to a playmaking centre forward? Because you know they're practically gone now. You know, it's most teams are playing two forwards and everyone else moving up and down the field a bit like basketball. Some of the braver teams are trying to hold someone on the 45, sort of a kicking game. Mm-hmm. But a traditional centre forward like a Kieran MacDonald, like a Brian McGuigan, they're the ones kind of in my era, mm-hmm, that I loved watching, that their role was assists and good ball into the full forward line. Now with the attacking mark, are these lads going to come back?
Yeah, it's a good question, and Dermot Connolly's another one you'd certainly put in that bracket. Certainly,
he works too hard, you know.
He works too hard tracking back, with the club. Anyone watching our games over the years, himself and Mossy just had a great relationship. Dermot would get the ball and around the 45, 50, and he'd just turn his man and just angle ball straight to the chest, or one bounce into the chest. But that type of football, the way that the game has kind of gone and evolved, we are certainly seeing less of it. Again, going back to my own experiences, the better we became under Jim Gavin, Willie, it was about kind of adapting and evolving to what was in front of you. We wanted to play a football style game, rather a kick passing, get the ball up to the guys up front and let them do the business. But again, if you're faced with a parked bus, you have to be reasonable and sensible, and you have to be pragmatic, and that's where the basketball style approach comes in, where you're going left to right and right to left, and you're kind of prodding and probing and create little holes and little gaps. Mm. But that's just an element of how the game's gone. But
But the idea that somebody wouldn't be holding the half forward line now is ridiculous with this marking. You know, that's your kicking game gone. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It is, because you've no other way of getting it up to the two without carrying it, because the gap is too big. Do you know what I mean? And the others will probably, other team will leave someone there. So we will see difference in formations.
The kick out from the 20 metre line, I think, will improve the number of forwards that will be kept up front in the opposition half, because, you know, from the 20 metre line to the 45 metre line, like, there's not that much of a distance, so most keepers would be able to kick it beyond the opposition 65
yard line.
Imagine
with a breeze as well.
With a breeze as well. So that will encourage teams to set up with keeping three, if not four, forwards further up the field. And even by the time the keeper gets the ball out of the 20 metre line, it gives guys who are tracking back an opportunity to push back up to the other side of the field.
It'll be interesting to track and see, especially with Dublin and Kerry, even have they worked on it? What are they thinking of doing? You know, again, we'll talk about that in part two. Another thing, Clifford is Kerry captain. What do you think, lads? He turns 21. I think it's his birthday today, so happy birthday, David. I don't know if you listen to the show or not. But, you know, there's a look of a Michael Murphy type of appointment here, you know, an unbelievable player. Doesn't seem to take too much pressure on his shoulders, seems to have a very relaxed, you know, attitude about the game. And obviously with the very old-fashioned method of picking a captain in Kerry, where he's pretty much the only one. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? That was, you know, in line for this. That's guaranteed off East Kerry to start, even though they're such a good team. They don't have guaranteed starters, I don't think, outside of Clifford.
I still don't necessarily agree with that method of picking a captain.
Yeah, it's desperate.
But like Clifford would be, he mightn't have been the first choice if you could have picked anyone from Kerry, but he's still a natural leader, not in the old-fashioned way of, you know, banging. I doubt David Clifford is going to be banging the dressing room door down, or, you know.
You don't know, you see. Well, he's not shy, and he's a good talker, so maybe he is a talker in the dressing room.
Even if he isn't, if David Clifford hasn't been vocal before now, like, Peter Keane isn't going to be expecting David Clifford to suddenly make loads of speeches before a game or anything like that. The way David Clifford is going to lead, and he has done to date, is that, like, David Clifford never hides, he never shies away. He's going to be the guy that gets out when Kerry are in difficulty. He's going to be the man demanding the ball.
Yeah.
You know, and like, if he was to ever feel pressure, you know, to the need to maybe speak up in the dressing room, I imagine the likes of David Moore and Tommy Welch, the older lads, would say, listen, you don't worry about that. If there's something to be said, we can say it. You just concentrate on doing what you've been doing already. Because and I'm sure Peter Keane is well aware of that, even though the process has lended itself to picking David Clifford as captain, but doesn't want to go putting any extra responsibility on David Clifford that's already there.
Probably not. So, he was quoted this week and he says, I've been captain before. He was captain with the minors one of the years, I think in 2017. He says, I've been captain before and there's not a whole pile involved in it, to be honest.
Well, there you go.
See, that's captain of a minors. And it got me kind of thinking a bit, Ger. I know you've captained your club, that I've captained Portlaoise as well. I took it very seriously. I didn't think there's not a whole pile in it. I kind of went, Jesus, because the reasons I was given for being picked captain were good reasons. They told me that when my attitude is off, a training session doesn't go well. When my attitude's on, you know, or I'm up for it, I'm going for it, there's more of a spark about training and the lads react to me. And I wasn't just like, you're captain, whose turn is it? It was like, I'm picking you as captain because of these reasons. And I felt great responsibility from that then. And my levels of training went through the roof, my leadership, all those things. And I took it seriously. I was almost like a mini manager. Like, I mean, lads didn't want to cross me too much or didn't want to, but I was still their friend. But I don't know. I just think in the GAA, a lot of it is a little bit like David's kind of attitude. No, he's young now, but it's like, all right, like, sometimes it's shared around. Who hasn't done it yet? And it's not like, give the picking a captain, I think a thought has to go into that. Why is he captain?
I suppose we have to be aware of the tradition that is there and how Kerry selected captains, the Morden, Kilkenny, the Hurling, the winning club.
They're the only two left, really, the big ones, and they've done all right.
So that tradition, that culture, like, it's extremely normal. So it's unusual to us here, because we've seen captains being selected in the Morden yourself, and the Morden a few times been captain as well. That you're picked for those reasons, as you described, Willie. In the case of Kilkenny and Kerry, it's kind of it's a default thing. But there's so many leaders in the dressing room, where guys are so used to playing with the selection process in place that it probably doesn't matter. And listen to Peter Keane during the week. He was talking with David Clifford. He said things rest lightly on his shoulders, that he's not overly worried about it. And even David Clifford himself was talking about, there's so many other leaders in the dressing room, sure, I just keep doing what I'm doing anyway. But there is an honour that definitely comes with it. Is it more of an honour when you're selected by the management, or if there's some senior players involved in picking you? There probably is, as opposed to being picked because of a default or an older way of selection. But it is an important role when you're captain. You're like an extended member of the management team.
I think you need to remember that you're the middleman between the panel and the manager, and you have to be well respected from both sides, right? So you have to be one of the lads, but respected, and then you have to be telling the management they're not happy about that, you know, or that hasn't gone down well, and have a good relationship with them.
Yeah, well, that was Kilkenny's last All Ireland. It was Lester Ryan. He said everything in Irish. I don't think he played a minute of the All Ireland final.
Yeah, no, that happened with Michael Fennelly in 2009.
And Michael Fennelly,
him. Darren O'Sullivan, I think he captained him 1 year. I don't think he was a guarantee on it.
Owen Brosnan as well.
It's desperate stuff, lads, when that happens to a player.
It is desperate stuff because, again, we've all been injured or we've been deselected or you're on the bench. You don't really feel part of it unless you're playing, and that's being honest. So you want to be on the pitch doing, contributing in some way or form. So to be captain now, Clifford's obviously going to be playing in the, for Kerry for as long as he wants and as long as he's injury free. But yeah, it's an antiquated process or way of selecting the captain, but
yeah, it works for them.
It works for them.
Yeah. And when you look at Dublin, Stephen Cluxton would never be Dublin captain with Parnells, obviously, if they use that. And look what a captain, you know, he's been. Isn't it mad when you think about it?
Yeah.
Why would they still be doing it? That was done in Laois. I think it was Liam Kearns said, no way, not continuing on that. Like, I was nominated as captain of Laois the year I was captain of Portlaoise because we won the Leinster Club. And I didn't get on with Mick at all.
Mm.
And Portlaoise put me forward, which is fair enough. And Portlaoise captain, it would have been wrong if I didn't. And I ended up going travelling, didn't go to Laois. I was like, how could I be captain with Mico when we don't get on?
Yeah.
And I was like, I could never fill the role I did with Portlaoise with him because he wouldn't give me any responsibility. Mico would just have a captain as a captain. And, you know, Mico is the boss, pretty much. He wouldn't have picked a captain for the reasons to Portlaoise management. And another thing is, I wouldn't have had the clout in with Laois that I did with Portlaoise. So if I wanted to go in telling the lads, you know, I would be told, here, Wooly, come on now. What's changed
who
with you, buddy? Yeah,
yeah,
here, go back to messing down the back of the bus or whatever. But like, you know, I think often it's seen too simplistically in GAA. And you look at rugby, you look at cricket, all these different sports, you know, treat captains a lot more seriously than they do in GAA.
They do, and reading a couple of the rugby books and listening to Rory Best and former captains, you are given a level of respect. You are taking leadership in training sessions. If the previous captain is still involved in the team, it's not for the previous captain to talk just before the squad go onto the field. It's for whoever's been selected and been asked to do it. And I suppose in the case of, again, of Kerry in this case, some of the older guys who are maybe, what would you call it, more obvious captains in the sense that we're talking about in terms of picking a natural leader, I'm sure they'll feed into David Clifford quietly in the training and the lead-up to games, and they leave it to Clifford then to say a couple of words in the dressing room or that beforehand.
There's probably some sort of leadership group as well with the senior players.
And I'm not sure if I agree with leadership groups, because Liam Kearns started leadership groups and there was maybe six lads. And I just remember thinking they'd be called over, and I just thought it created a separation. Like, we'd be looking at them going, ugh. You know, like, I don't think that's
more subtle than that.
Like, no, they were called in. Everybody knew who the leadership group were. And then that causes them and us. Do you know, I didn't think it was necessary at all.
The why behind the what, I suppose, is important. And why would you create a leadership group in the GAA setting versus a professional setting like rugby, where having played schools rugby, would have gone Belvedere, so played junior cup and senior cup rugby, so you had your pack leader and then you had your kind of leader, the backs, and some either the pack leader or the backs leader was also captain as well, but you looked after your own little unit, and that was a natural little leadership group there, but it fits well in the rugby
then
paradigm.
You're playing two different games, you know,
you're playing two different games forward, but in Gaelic games where it's so non-linear, if I can use that phrase, but it's kind of chaotic. And there's constant movement, and sometimes you're forward, sometimes you're back.
Yeah.
The only one that's static is probably the goalkeeper in the modern game. So a leadership group like that, I don't think it works. Gaelic games is about the training sessions down. You're going over to a fella. You're starting full forward this week. You're going really well in training, and delighted for you. And I want you just to set the tone in the forward line. And now I might say the same thing to probably five or six other fellas. But Matt, Connor, Woolley and the two lads, come on over here at the end of the training session, and you're the leaders of this group.
Yeah, for some feedback. I wouldn't say Jim Gavin would have had leadership groups. I would say he'd empower every player.
Exactly.
He?
Yeah. I wouldn't sit well with me either. That's what I'm saying.
No.
But your captain is your captain.
No, I don't mind the captain. Yeah, I don't mind the captain. Yeah. Like, there has to be a captain of the team. Right, okay, listen, lads, we've gone over time there, but there's no harm in that. We'll come back and we'll look at the Dublin-Kerry game and one or two other important games in the other divisions. Come here, I want you to talk us through the goal you scored in the county final after 15 seconds. I want you to tell me when you had goal on your mind.
Yeah, you've probably had a few 15 seconds experiences yourself. Break me off, show me what you got, because I don't want
no 1 minute man. Okay, so what a start to the league. We have Dublin versus Kerry in Croke Park at 7:15, and this is on Air Sport. This is the return of Joe Brolly, and it's on RTE too as well. And what makes it extra interesting, I suppose, is that Jim Gavin's gone and Desi Farrell's in. And we have to see what Desi's going to do. We have to see what he's going to do with the attacking mark. Dublin's forward line hasn't changed in the last 2 years. Conor Callaghan's an obvious target for an attacking mark. Dean Rock, not so much. Mannion, another target. But do you think maybe he might change Scully and Howard dropping back so far? If he needs to get the ball faster to them or let Kilkenny hold, he's definitely going to have to make that team his own a little bit, isn't he, Ger?
He certainly is, and he'll want to do that too. He certainly won't dismantle everything that was good about Jim's setup, because he wouldn't be that silly or egotistical, but he'll have his own natural way of wanting to set up the team. There's probably a lot of unknowns. I haven't seen the 15 name just yet. I know there's a couple of guys.
They're only back from holidays.
A couple of weeks, and you still have a couple of fellas playing college football or just finished up playing college football, so they might feature the weekend. It is interesting. This offensive mark, and in UCD now, we've been trialling this since before the Christmas, and it's not, for me, it hasn't had a massive impact on the game just yet. Now, when you mention some of the players that you did there from Dublin, their ability to win ball in the air, and even Kieran Kilkenny the odd time when he goes inside.
And I haven't mentioned Dear McConnelly.
You haven't mentioned Dear McConnelly then
so
as well.
So Dear McConnelly has to start for Dublin with this. Like we mentioned, he'd stick it onto
centre
your chest.
Forward.
Centre forward, and don't track Dermot. Unless it's completely, desperate stakes.
And then another way you could deploy him is Dermot's 31 or 2 now. So instead of having to track back the whole time as a modern day half forward, his ability to win ball in the air is second to none too.
Is he good over his head?
He's with the club. He's outrageous, with some of the takes and leaps. He has, but the way Dublin play and set up over the last number of years, he hasn't had to do that.
No.
I'm sure there's so many great fielders like the likes of Howard and Paul Finn for years as well. So Cluck have plenty of options, but I think Dermot could be a viable option in there as well in the full forward line.
I think Dermot Connolly is a great outside bet for player of the year this year.
With the
motivation he's going to have, with the year last year, no injuries, going to play a lot of the league, I'd imagine. Get a full... You remember Paul Galvin had a desperate year the year before, came back in 09, won player of the year. I think if Connolly is motivated with this attacking mark and, a new manager that he's trying to impress... you get a good price on him.
Gaelic football is very possession based, and fellas are shy and slow to kick the long diagonal ball in.
He's not
and even in the All-Ireland final he did attempt a few passes and
got credit for one he probably didn't mean
did he not mean that?
I know we had this debate, we weren't sure.
Right, I didn't do that show. I thought he meant that.
The trajectory of it was a bit
he did have a bit of a nightmare in that final, I thought. He kicked two brilliant passes, right, but a lot of he looked nervous and he'd given the ball away an awful lot,
and regardless of how talented you are, when you're out of the game even for a couple of months, it takes 3, 4, 5 matches to get the game sharpness back. And you can be fit as you want in terms of the heart rate monitor and doing the sprints and the times and the bleep test. But again, we all know you've got to be playing matches just to get your eye.
And the throwing game that he did play was no preparation for Kerry, because he was just hanging around the middle.
It's interesting you mentioned him on the inside, though, because like you, Willie, just because of his ability to kick passes, I would have thought that he was an ideal for around 11. But also, if he's receiving the ball just inside the 45 as well, who else would you want shooting from that distance?
But he's going to, his starting run is going to be from the 45. He's going to make runs maybe 10 metres in the field, and he's going to turn and hit, because he needs to be outside the 45, obviously, to be giving in those pings.
Yeah.
I can't see Mannion or Conn changing in that full forward line. They're sensational ball winners for different ways. Mannion's pace and Conn's bloody burliness and ability
to
strength.
Win any ball, yeah.
Do you know, I see Connolly, Conn, and Mannion having a great understanding with this attacking mark.
I'm going to so show my cards here. I just don't see it influencing Gaelic football as much as we think.
Right, and not this year maybe, but
not this year. Yeah. And you will have to actively strategize in terms of how you want to set up your forward.
Why
play.
Wouldn't they do that though? Because I know you don't have, you wouldn't have time in DC or UCD in colleges, but why would a manager not go, I'm going to get a head start on everyone else here, and I'm going to strategize for this.
It's going to be nearly a generational thing, I think, Willie. I think kids will have to get used to playing from an underage. I'm you're playing centre forward. Are you going to all of a sudden? I'm past the 45. I'm just going to ramble back here 10, 15 metres in case the ball does come in. So get the mark inside. Players don't think like that. I think the only time the markings of the field come into play, Willie, is when you're near the sideline or the end line or the small square.
Yeah,
I just don't think it's ingrained in us to be able to adapt. Now, a couple of training sessions we would have had, we were putting a couple of cones across the 45 metre line just to make it more visual for players to think about maybe hanging in side to receive the mark.
Yeah,
but it just didn't happen. So
I would say receiving the mark inside the 45 line is just going to be so unusual for players, you wouldn't stop.
Yeah,
it's just so unusual. Maybe if you catch it closer to goal and you realise there's a sweeper there or someone else, you might go, while it's in the air, I might mark. You might actually decide before the ball comes in, I might mark one here. But I do think, I know there's a lot of worry out there about it becoming like Aussie rules, but I cannot see a fella on the run just inside the 45 taking a mark.
But aren't there different rules between just inside the 45 and then in a large parallelogram, I think? As in, like, so the what became clear about the mark this week is that when the receiver, whoever receives the mark, has time to either take four steps or the length that it's going to, you know, take them to do a solo. So, like, to me,
they can't be tackled in that time.
Yeah, to me, that just seemed ridiculously unfair on the defender, because they've already won the ball. If it was a forward to win the ball in front of the defender, because I know the defender can play in the mark as well, but that they have to, they can't tackle them, and then they have to give them the opportunity to take them on. Then they realise, oh, I'm not going to take them on.
That's
and
very messy.
The free anyway.
It's very messy. Close to goal, if you have to allow the player to take the four steps before getting a tackle in.
That's why I think it might
shocking.
Be different in the large parallelogram.
But in the large parallelogram, you can tackle straight away.
You can tackle
if
straight away. But
mark.
To me, this is just adding more and more confusion. Like, to me, like, you should, the player should, it should be on the player to make the decision straight away, to me. Just if you're taking the mark, you know, put up your hand or whatever.
And stop. Yeah, it's like rugby. Like, I mean, that's not rocket science how rugby call it. They call it while it's in the air, like they're calling it, you know?
Yeah.
Or they'll shout, or they'll mark the minute you catch it and you're not moving any further.
Yeah.
The mark that they used in the National League last year, I would have rather that stay in.
That's
inside the 20 metre line.
Yeah.
And what you said is perfectly accurate, that I'm catching a ball inside the 20 metre line, I'm stopping, I'm taking a kick.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you? Unless there's an obvious goal on, but that's
unless an obvious goal on, and it's far easier for the officials to police then as well.
But just going back there to what you said about, like, teams strategising, the reason they didn't strategise for that last year is because they knew it wasn't going to come in the championship.
No.
So I think it might be a little bit different.
It's absolutely brain dead how they're bringing all this about.
Yeah. No, it's brain dead to bring it out to the 45 and then throw all these outside the 45 is different than inside
and
the
conditions in, yeah.
That's great. Just Christ almighty.
To the best of my knowledge, the inter-county referees weren't consulted on the new rules. They're now being told what they are, but they weren't consulted by the hierarchy.
I was just listening to Stephen Rochford did an interview with the Mayo News podcast, and he was saying that they had an inter-county referee out to explain the various rules of the mark. That's the first time I know it was in the media this week, but that was the first time I had heard about the different rules for outside the large parallelogram and inside the large parallelogram.
No, it is. Well, it's definitely a weird one. MDMA might be on the way out, you'd imagine, just based on his club form this year, and he's 33. He's done everything in the game, you know. You'd imagine maybe Dublin might need a midfielder to go along with Fenton, because I think James McCarthy will probably need to be moved back into defence, because he's the only one with a bit of physical presence really in that Dublin back line. And like, if we're being honest, Philly McMahon came on to mark Tommy Walsh. You'd imagine Kerry will be starting Tommy Walsh now. You know, Dublin probably do need a bit more physicality into their defence.
Certainly,
with the mark in mind.
Yeah, and again, Michael Darragh, and he's another viable option to stick in on the edge of the square if you were chasing the game for a couple of marks. His club form, he'll kill me for saying this, but his club form for Ballyboden over his career has been very hit and miss.
Really?
And a lot of it is probably down to how well probably the county has gone and a couple of niggles he would have picked up. But he's performed, I would say, better for Dublin than the club for various different reasons. But so I wouldn't go on the recent club form. I think he was kind of frustrated in a lot of the games, but he is 33, but he has a great engine. He actually does a lot of yoga, funny enough, if anyone does yoga and wellness. But we're setting up a new group here with the lads.
we're all passionate about the subject.
We could get him to come in and do a class with us, yeah. But Mick is extremely, he is 33 in age, but you know, he's the body of a 25, 26 year old.
Really? Because I thought, it's not like he's so all action and he gets a lot of injuries. I would have thought the opposite, that he might have a lot of mileage on it at this stage.
He definitely has a lot of mileage on it, but he just minds himself so well.
Right.
He is that dedicated, and I haven't talked to him recently, but again, it comes down to what does he want to do himself.
Yeah.
But Desi certainly wouldn't be opening the door to any of these fellas. Like, you know, he'd be looking to take the best of what's left from them, but also to bring on some of the younger guys that Desi would be trying to
Well, that's the thing. Conor McHugh, he's the same club man as Conor McHugh, and we know the ability he has. So we could see him getting it. I just don't see where these lads going to fit in. That Dublin forward line, for me, only has room for Connolly to come in. It hasn't changed in 2 years, and Jim Gavin loves changing things around, and he's like, that's too good to change. You know,
that was the craziest thing about watching the Dublin Club Championship, like at the end of last year as well. I'm seeing Conor McHugh and I'm seeing Colin Basquell. I was thinking, these would get into any other county team apart from Dublin, and they're barely getting a sniff with Dublin. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And it must be fair play to them for having the motivation to come back every year, and they tend to start these games, or they tend to get games of the O'Byrne Cup and stuff like that, probably knowing in their head that unless they play, you know, an absolute blinder, that come the championship they're not going to be getting a sniff in the six. So I don't know unless what Connolly coming in 11 will do to Kieran Kilkenny. I'm not sure. When you mentioned midfield there, I think Jer makes a good point about MDMA. I don't know what looking at putting Brian Howard back towards midfield be something of an option that Desi Farrell might look at in the long run. That creates space in the half-hour line as well.
Could put Howard wing back for the mark as well, just to beef up his back line a little bit, you know, with a bit of kind of size.
There's another guy, Potter O'Coughlin-Byrne.
Oh, yeah.
Coolin, he's still very, very young and he needs a bit of time, but he has a lot of potential.
Right.
He could potentially be starting championship during the summer.
In midfield.
Darren Gavin Silver.
He's around. He went off the scene a lot, didn't he? He was starting
good league last
good year. Good few league games. Yeah, we thought he'd make the step up. In Kerry, I suppose Paddy Clifford is going to get a go, David's brother. Interesting to see. It's a weird one with Kerry as well, because they have Sean O'Shea, Clifford, Geaney, and Stephen O'Brien. None of them are being changed. So Kerry only have room for two, and it's about balance with Kerry. You know, those are four forwards and they won't move. They'll try not to come back out of their own half. Then maybe Sean O'Shea drops a bit too deep at times, so maybe he'll be given a more told to stay a little bit further up with the mark, you know, on the way as well. Then you have two places left. You know, who's going to get them? You know, Dermot O'Connor came in, Adrian Spillane played there. Darren Moynihan, Gavin White for me is a wing back, not a wing forward. Don't mess with him. Put him wing back and let him attack and give him an extra dynamic to the defence. But there is two kind of forward places potentially up for grabs. Two boat Spillanes would have a case. But Tommy Walsh then with the attack and mark, is he a guarantee? Is Tommy Walsh and David Clifford play inside on their own, and does Sean O'Shea and Stephen O'Brien hold the 40? Do you know, is that your makeup of Kerry's forward with the advanced mark?
I think the legal might be a lot different from the championship in that regard, because come towards the end of the championship last year, Tommy Walsh was a live option to bring on, you know, from the bench, and it worked for Kerry to the extent that he had done so well coming on that we were wondering would he start for
the replay. He has to start with the mark.
That's what I'm thinking now.
He's marking those. They're guaranteed points.
Well, especially you're talking about the Dublin full-back line as well, especially against Dublin this weekend, and seeing what Tommy Walsh has done to them before, I would be very surprised if he doesn't start in the full forward.
Amazed.
I'm going to put my hand out to be slapped, and maybe you're both going to slap it next Thursday, but I just don't see the mark having as big of an impact on the game at the moment. But that's just...
But if Tommy Walsh caught three balls in a half or two balls in each half, that's four marks. And it's not beyond the bounds of possibility for two diagonals to go into Tommy Walsh. Not changing your game plan massively. You're sending in two diagonals when they're on. And that's four points Tommy Walsh could potentially, or three of the four, say, for a player like that, I think it's a no-brainer for me.
If I can draw somewhat of a comparison between, say, Dean Rock a couple of years ago and Tommy Walsh, Dean Rock has been our top scorer for the last five seasons. Dean would have been criticised about his general play, gameplay, and that he needs to develop that and he needs to kick a couple of scores in general play and be more involved that way, as opposed to just being accurate with a kick. For me, Tommy Walsh, watching how he moves since he's come back from the AFL, I don't think he's the player that he was before he went out. He's definitely improved over the last couple of seasons, but I just don't think he's the player he was when he went out. And I think you need to be doing more in general play than what he has currently offered. Down in Austin Stack Park in the league, got a bit heated all right with Dublin Kerry last year. He was quite effective when there's a few marks went into him. I don't know, was it maybe Davey Bourne was under pressure that night trying to mark him? I think James McCarthy went back in on him. And that kind of solved that. But
I think it could be right about the mark in general that it mightn't have that much of an impact in the game. I was more thinking of a horses for courses approach for, like, Kerry haven't seen what works against Dublin in the past, and having a weapon like Tommy Welsh, especially, you know, lay down a marker first weekend of league, I thought that's why they'd do it. But I think you have a point about maybe we are over egging the impact that the mark is going to have.
Knowing how slowly things change in GAA and how most managers are not innovative and copy, they'll wait to see some manager come along with a tactic for this advanced mark and copy it.
And that
might not happen this year. It might happen this year's championship. Now next year's league, they'll all be... It's like when Feck and Kieran Donaghy played full forward for Kerry. Suddenly we were playing Noel Garvin full forward.
Our midfielder,
and they all started doing it then. Then, you know, like, I mean, that's what will happen this. It will happen this, that a good manager, an innovative manager, will think up of a way of exploiting the mark, and then that will be copied.
And then
we'll change the rule back.
And I have a very simple idea, right? Well, and it's based on how many of diagonal balls into the edge of the square are caught cleanly, right? Not that many are caught. The ball is broken down. Donaghy was the exception, and Walsh before he went to the AFL. The ball is broken down, and you'd have a Gooch or someone looping around banana run, pop ball over the bar. So we'll still see that, right? But if you're playing a packed defence, you're moving the ball from left to right, and the ball is you're in possession outside the 45-yard line, you're looking for a 30-yard punt pass into the chest, where the forward starts maybe on the edge of the large rectangle and makes a direct run, and it's a straight punt pass straight to the chest, and he's catching and he's marking the ball on the edge of the arc. That would be an effective way of the point.
But that's do you see teams being able to drop off then with that mark, because they have to pressurise the kicker, or else the danger is that a good diagonal ball and all these lads are back there wasted? Do you know what I mean? The whole concept of the mark, I'd imagine, would be every team needs to press and tackle the man on the ball, you know what I mean, the man on the ball, for the danger of allowing, because a good diagonal ball will catch out most defenders anyways. It's a forwards ball, right? It'll be interesting to see all this, lads. It adds extra spice to the league. The tier 2 adds extra spice, and the new rules add extra spice. I'm more enthusiastic about this league than I have been in a lot of leagues. Just quickly, lads, the big game in Division 2 is Armagh versus Cavan. We know Cavan are decimated with fellas not committing, a lot of their big players as well, and Keane Mackey is retired. Armagh have Oisín O'Neill back. He was out after with surgery. Himself and Gerald O'Byrne's very interesting midfield, the two of them. James Morgan is back as well. They look very good for Division 2. The big one in Division 3, we're running out of time here and we want to do predictions next. The big one in Division 3 is Tipperary and Down. They're both going to be in the hunt. You'd imagine Cork or certs to come back up out of Division 3. Tipperary played Down at home this weekend. That's the big one. The big one in Division 4, most of the teams are in the mix to get promoted here. Antrim are home to Wexford. We know all the story coming out of Wexford. Paul Galvin left Doughty Walters and Michael Furlong off the panel, and Matt Doyle, Kevin O'Grady and Tiernan Rossiter quit along with them. I think those boys all live together, and to be fair, whatever Paul Galvin's reasons were to drop Doughty Walters and Michael Furlong, it does kind of point at a serious attitude problem for the other three under a new manager like Paul Galvin to say I'm staying out with, you know what I mean? I've often dropped off leash panels. I didn't see any leash players come with me, nor would I want them to come with me. That would be out of the question. It's like, this panel is a healthy panel. There's a new manager coming in here, doesn't fancy you. You said I feel terrible for you. You know what I mean? But the idea that you would leave a county squad, your own county, in solidarity with someone, that stinks of a group of players whose attitude isn't right. Would that be fair, Ger?
Yeah, it is a
without
fair point.
Without knowing anything about this.
It's a big challenge going into an inter-county team as your first major role. Paul, super player, I nearly draw comparisons between him and Roy Keane, the way they went about their business on the field and the standards that they kind of demanded of their teammates. As a manager, I think you have to be more persuasive and diplomatic, maybe in coercing fellas to buy into what you're trying to do. When five fellas go like that, it's fellas are throwing out the toys at the bathwater.
Two were dropped and three went with them.
Three went with them.
But, so that's five. It's a terrible hit for Wexford panel to lose. To lose five fellas.
And they did. I know it was only pre-season.
Well, they're losing three. They're losing three fellas. Yeah. They're not losing the two that were. You know, they decided to drop off the panel.
Like he said, a couple of them were gone. Like he had heard that they were gone before they actually told him. So I suppose that doesn't really reflect well on their attitude as well. And I think he said that he had already got the impression from their attitude of training that they didn't want to be there. So
right,
doesn't sound good about the players that did leave in solidarity, I suppose.
Yeah, no, usually in part three we look ahead to the matches at the weekend, but we're going to look ahead to the entire league and give you our predictions, and we'll have a look back at them when the league's over and you can all laugh at us. We'll talk about that next.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're at home about where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient. But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken out, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me. You're looking
out
at me
of a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
All right, league predictions. So we're going to start with Division 1. Let's see who we think is going to be in the final here. So I have gone with league final between Kerry and Galway. And I have relegation Meath and Monaghan. So I don't know about you, boys. I'll give you my reasons for that. I think Kerry are going to try and build on last year. I think they're going to... This is all about who takes it seriously and who doesn't. I've wrote off Tyrone with the two lads being out. I don't think Monaghan and Meath, for obvious reasons. Donegal have been are decimated with injuries. Audra McNeilish obviously hasn't committed. Oisin Gallen is gone. Jason McGee is out. Stephen McManam is out. Paddy McBrearty's in the US. So other than that, I would be thinking Donegal will have a good league, because I think they're at the trajectory where they'll take the league seriously. I think Tyrone, obviously, for those reasons. I think Galway, I have a big, big soft spot for Galway, Ger. I don't know if you've listened to the show, but I think they have a huge amount of potential. I think Pádraic Joyce could get it out of them. Again, I think they'll target the league. Again, they have Shane Walsh, Damien Combe, Reen Burke, Michael Daly as their four forwards that will probably stay up there. Anthony Finnerty, interesting to see him there. Or Anthony Finnerty's son, Robert. He's playing corner forward. They have a new goalkeeper, which is absolutely vital. I said at the end of last year, if Galway don't come back with a new goalkeeper next year, forget about it. So Conor Gleeson, be interesting to see what he's like. We mentioned Eamon Brannigan, McDade and Heaney are playing in the backs. A lot more attacking. I think they'll start pressing teams very high up the field. And I think when you have teams which will continue to just play two forwards up and have no kicking game, pressing them, you get a lot of joy because they have to move it out with the hands. They can't catch your players out of position. So I think that the kick that the new management will give Galway, and I think Dublin, because they're only back from holidays and because Jim Gavin could handle that, I don't know if Desi will handle it as well. And I think obviously there's a target on Dublin's back. I see Dublin having a similar league to last year, maybe not getting to the final. Kerry and Galway for me. So, league champions, Kerry.
Right, follow that. I'm going to go for Dublin and Galway. I get what you say about Dublin, but I think last year was the first year, and I don't know how many years that they weren't in the final. I think that Desi will be keen to make an impression, and I think that the squad is big enough to handle, you know, lads coming back from holiday and various injuries and stuff like that. I think Galway as well, for all the reasons you mentioned there. I think they'll get the new manager boost under Pádraic Joyce. much as I don't particularly want to see Galway well to do well in Connacht, I'm very interested to see how they play in the league, because I think they're going to be way different from how they were under under Kevin Welch, playing under Pádraig Joyce. And I just think some of the other teams, just to mention Mayo, I think they're in a far different situation than they were this time last year. I mean, a lot of Mayo senior players played right throughout the league. Mayo got an early burst. They beat Tyrone.
Yeah.
They got a couple of good results early, then ended up beating Kerry and kind of nearly fluked their way to a league final, and then ended up obviously in a position to win it. But I think
Mayo don't need the league this year.
No, they don't. No, I think this is something that Mayo fans say a lot of the time, but I think as long as we maintain our Division 1 status and we've gone close enough the last few years, I think we'll be happy. So like you, I just think the yo-yo effect for teams coming up between Division 1 and 2, I think that'll happen to me this year. I don't know if they the quality just to stay up. And I think Monaghan, given everything last year, they just seem to be on a downward trajectory. They'll have the new manager bounce as well with Banty, but I just think they might struggle as well. So
I wouldn't rule Mayo out of that relegation thing.
I could see Mayo.
They have four debutants. In fairness to Galway, Mayo and Cork, they've all picked their team for the league already. I love that. At least just something to go on. But the four debutants, I thought it was interesting. They've Colin Boyle as a cornerback. I'm saying this now. You play an attacking player a cornerback now, because every team plays with two in the full forward line. Let him follow him out and give them something to think about. I think Johnny Heaney with Galway. Who else do we have? We had a couple more examples.
Oh, we had last week.
Obviously Philly McMahon and, you know, these fellas with Dublin. When you're playing a two-man full forward line, what's the point in playing a traditional cornerback that's not going to hurt them? Send them out. I'd play a corner forward cornerback is what I would do.
The only thing I'll say about Colin Boyle is that, so he's playing four and Pádraig O'Hara is playing five. So a lot of people outside Mayo might know about Pádraig O'Hara. He got a run the team, very brief run the team in Stephen Rochford's first year. But he's actually been one of the best club players in Mayo for the last few years, and he's like Colin Boyle's spirit animal. He's very tenacious. He actually went, I think he took a year off, did a bit of MMA for a while, so he did a few like really good man marking jobs on the likes of Killian O'Connor.
I'm sure he did a few big players
in the club championship last year. So apparently, like, you don't read much into an FPD game, but apparently he was very impressive against Galway last week as well. So of all the newbies for Mayo, I'm looking forward to seeing him.
Quickly, just having a note here, Tom Parsons is back, Aidan O'Shea into the forwards along with James Carr for my offensive marks. I'm all over the offensive marks. Yeah. I think teams are going to restructure, but you were saying they're not, and I do take your point. The more I think about it, the more I think managers go, that seems too complicated now for me. I was thinking Killian O'Connor might move out to the 40 as a playmaker, you know, with the two bigger ball winners inside like Aidan O'Shea, and with obviously Tom Parsons back. Who are you going for league final and relegation and champions, Ger?
I think Meath and Monaghan will struggle in the division. I know Banty is first year back in there again, but Monaghan last year, they bet Dublin in the first game, or won the first, was it their first game?
That was the year before,
to beat them in the last game. They beat them the last 2 years in the league.
Yeah, and they've lost every other game then.
No, last year was the first game, fault.
So I think they're going to struggle. I think that group is on a downward trajectory. Look at the team, Malone, fair play to them, still playing, but they've a lot of older guys there who haven't trialled and tested and have given everything to the cause. So maybe Banty's going to set up differently, more defensively, I don't know, but I think they'll struggle. Mead coming up, Andy McEntee will have them extremely fit, and they're a tough team. Do they have the quality and experience just yet? I don't know.
Probably not. Only thing in Mead's favour is that first, this league is going to be a championship for them, whereas it's not going to be a championship for any of the other teams. Do you know what I mean? I can see Meath picking up a win or two. I can see them going down, but I can see them, you know, maybe beating a Donegal, you know, or something.
They got Mayo early enough.
Beating a Mayo,
yeah.
So, your point about Kevin McStay earlier on, where Roscommon put an awful lot of work into staying up in Division 1, and they were knackered come championship, and then they were brutal in championship, and then the league forms were forgotten about. But Andy McEntee will obviously want to keep the guys in that division, because when you're competing against the better players, you learn and you develop better. League finalists, I think Galway will definitely have a good bounce off Pádraig Joyce. Hopefully they go back to a more traditional kick passing type football, the way Corfin play, and Joyce being a forward and a centre forward as well, having marked him a couple of times towards the latter stage of his career. You kind of thought you had him in your pocket, but just the cleverness of the runs, and once he got the ball into his hands, you weren't getting the back from him.
And he's playing Shane Walsh full forward so far, which is interesting. Where he'll play Damien Comer, you want to wait until everybody's back, but Shane Walsh close to goals, like, I mean, he scores heavily, because in the half forward line it's a bit like Dear McConnelly. You play out there, you're chasing a lad, you don't want your star players chasing lads, do you?
And you've seen Shane Walsh a couple of times working hard, tracking back, and he's picking a ball in the 45, and you might break a tackle or two back there, but again, yeah, how much damage is it going to do. But I would agree with you what you're talking about in terms of Dublin, and Desi will try a couple of new players and new systems and whatever, so they certainly won't go down Dublin. Will they get to the league final? Probably not, but I'm going to go with Kerry and, oh, who would you say?
Kerry and Galway, is it for the final?
No, I think Mayo are going to do well. I know they won it last year, but yeah, second year, the lads will want to do well again, like, you know. But I do take on board your points that they don't necessarily need the league. So if they're going to trial a couple of new players.
But Kerry League champions, then you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, and you're saying Kerry League champion?
Are you I don't have Kerry in the final. I'll go Galway League champions.
Galway to beat Dublin in the final?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Never going to happen. I've got Kerry to beat Galway. Right, let's move on here, lads, because Cheddar will be in here soon. And Cheddar's our VIP pundit here, lads. I hope you know here, Ger. Yeah. Okay, Division 2. So for me, this is a shootout between Kildare, Armagh and Roscommon. So, like, I mean, I can't see anybody else featuring for promotion. Clare missing players. Their two most important players, Gary Brennan and Jamie Malone, the two players that would are their two Division 1 level players. Westmeath are missing Kieran Martin. Leash are missing the two Kingstons. And Attride, they're not going to feature. Fermanagh are an interesting one. I'm not really sure what to make of them. I think they'll just stay in and around mid-table. Armagh have 4 away games, right? And this obviously makes a difference, but they have Cavan and Kildare and Roscommon at home. So while the 4 away, their most important ones are at home. And then I see poor Leash, right? So Leash have 4 away, which is grand. But the 3 home games they have is Armagh, Cavan and Kildare. Like, you'd imagine that they'll say, now they have a great record against Armagh, but almost the 3 hardest games in the group they have at home. I'd rather have Westmeath, Clare and Fermanagh at home. Do you know that kind of way? Like, I mean, they have the easier games away, which makes them harder, and they have the harder games at home, which kind of negates your advantage. So that does make a big difference, the draw. Kildare, obviously, for me, are the standout favourites for it. They have Paul Cribben, Niall Kelly, Johnny Byrne and Daniel Flynn back from last year. And they have 4 home games. That's including Roscommon at home. So, like, I mean, for me, Kildare are no-brainers. And it's a toss-up between Roscommon and Armagh. I'm a big Armagh fan. Like, I'm a Galway fan. I have a little thing for Armagh. I think they have huge potential. So I'm going to go Kildare-Armagh in the final. And to be relegated, unfortunately, I think Clare are going to do enough to survive. Clare, it was funny, everybody's talking about Clare being missing players and everything. And Colin Connell's not talking like that at all. He says it's not all doom and gloom. Pierce Lillis is back. Kieran Russell didn't play against Meath last year. Caelan Sexton is back. And Dermot Coughlin was only coming back after a serious injury. So, like, while their 2 star players are gone, they 4 solid. Caelan Sexton, Pierce Lillis were guaranteed starters a few years before last year. So I think Clare will do enough to stay up. For me, then, it's Leash and Westmeath. It's a terrible thing to say, but I think Leash and Westmeath will go straight back down. If Leash had everybody, obviously the lads they're missing, Brendan Quigley is after retiring as well. And true Brendan Quigley form, Mike Quirk announced it. There was no GPA statement. There was no Twitter announcement. Brendan Quigley just retired and told his manager. Wasn't it great? As innocent days, Gerard, back when that was the case. So that's it. Yeah, I think, unfortunately, they're my predictions for 2.
Leash and Westmeath will definitely struggle. I think Clare will be highly motivated to be so high up in the leagues as a non-football county, so to speak. I think they'll be extremely fit coming into it. They'll put an awful lot of work into it. Leash and Westmeath, they've been there about Division 1, 2 and 3, but more 2 and 3.
They've been 1, 2, 3 and 4, the 2 of them in the last 6 or 7 years. They've been yo-yoing. Westmeath have an incredible record in that they haven't stayed in a division for the last 7 years.
and I think it's going to be the same.
They want to keep the record going, yeah.
But they'll be going back down. So
I mentioned Kieran Martin, who's probably their most, he was their captain last year, probably their most important player outside of John Heslin. He's going to miss most of the league with injuries. So that's good. Do you know, so who are we going to go?
I think
Roscommon
will win the league, and it'll be, I think if it's Armagh, will probably take Kildare. I like some of the new players I've seen. Jarrett Oakburns play colleges, and Rian O'Neill, very talented guys.
And Jamie Clark's back this year.
Jamie Clark's back.
He didn't
as well.
Play with Cross McGlenn, but he's back for Armagh. So that's Stephen Campbell. They have a great team, Armagh.
Great team, yeah. So Armagh and Roscommon in a league final with Roscommon to win.
Okay.
Roscommon, Kildare final, Laois and Westmeath to go down. I fear for Cavan actually, just with all the players they've
Cavan
lost.
Cavan could be in trouble with Mackie gone, with Dara McVitie, Killian Clark, Dara Moynihan. Lads, they're four best players.
Yeah.
Rahel as well, the wing back, yeah, you're right. So like, I mean, I wouldn't rule Cavan completely out of the drop as well. If anyone wants to get, it'll be between Laois, Westmeath, Cavan and Clare, I'd imagine, to potentially go down. Anyways, we'll go to Division 3, lads, because this is very, very easy for league champions here. This has to be Cork. How did I miss Keane O'Neill being brought into their backroom team? When did this happen? Right, Over Christmas, when I was not looking at any GAA news and taking a break. It must have been. I didn't know this. So he has these
new goggles he's going to bring in.
The occlusion goggles, yeah. Hope he doesn't lose the run of himself down there and start getting them in. Maybe when he's a number two. So the Nemo lads back in, but I don't think they're available for this weekend. This is the bad news. Brian Hurley's going to be out for 3 games. Mark Collins, they have their team picked as well. Mark Collins isn't picked. They've four of the under 21 players from last year starting. Paul Ring in the backs, Brian Hartnett in midfield or wing forward, he's a midfielder, Damien Gordon and Cathal O'Matney, who were corner forward and full forward under under 20s when they beat Dublin. Sean Potter is back, corner back, attacking corner back. Yeah. They're all doing it, lads. This is the new trend. You play an attacking corner. Now Jack McCaffrey will start playing number four. So you have Kieran Sheen is starting full forward as well. So, like, I mean, they have an incredible, you know, selection of players, and they always have, but especially now when you've Potter and Sheehan back, and then you've those 420s that are coming on the back of the good successful year they had last year. Corker and with Keane O'Neill, say what you want about Keane, he doesn't lack confidence, but he's a good record, and for Cork he will improve them massively.
Yeah, you'd have to fancy Cork to win and get promotion back up to Division 2. Surprisingly, when Cork again the Munster final last year reverted back to the way we would associate Cork play football, attacking style, put a high press on, they're much more suited to that. I think any Cork team that is overly tactical, I think fellas get lost. Look at the under 20s last year, it was just all out attack, put the press on the kick out, and let's just have a go here. We tried to get the plus one at the back, but let's just have a go and play football. And I know there's a bit more freedom at under 20 level. Well, you'd like to think there is.
The players took ownership of that and they responded to that. And it's another bit of proof that when players take ownership of something, they're responsible for it, and it's their neck on the line. You decided, lads.
Yeah, exactly.
Show me what you have. If this is what you want, that's a very important kind of tool for a manager to say, look, you tell me then.
It just makes
not
it,
always, you don't want to look weak, but
well, it makes it become authentic now. And if a player has players have outrageous ideas, okay, let's try them for a game or two. The manager might see things differently, and if they don't work, well then okay, your style hasn't worked, so we're going to try my style, so to speak. But there has to be a togetherness and a buy-in from everyone, like, you know.
Definitely. Another bit of information about Cork is they've lost their goalkeeper Mark White, and he has a booming goalkeeper. That's a huge loss to them, actually, because he's a, in the modern game, he can drive it to the far 45, especially with the new
kicker. Is he injured or
he's going travelling?
Okay.
Yeah, so he's gone. He can stick it. If he's kicking it from the 20 metre line, you could be hitting the far 45. He's got such a big kick, so he's a big loss. For me, I can't decide who's going to go up with Cork or who's going to be in the final, because for all Tipperary are missing Quinlivan, Liam McGrath, Liam Casey. Down are missing for the first few league games, Caelan Mooney, Conair Harrison and Niall Donnelly. Come on. Like, I mean, if three of the most important players that they have. Offaly, Longford are missing a whole load of fellas. They're missing Robbie Smith, Connor Berry, Barry McKeown, Darren Quinn, Aidan McGilligott, John Keegan and David McGivney. Now, they do have the Mullinahocta lads back in. Oh, David McGivney is Mullinahocta, definitely. They're out. So Longford aren't at full strength. Louder missing Andy McDonnell and one or two more. They're not at full strength. So, like, I mean, Leitrim have 4 away games and are missing an awful lot of players as well, and shipped an awful beating to Roscommon. So for me, I can't decide. I might go with Derry. I might go
I
with
thought it was going to be a surprise call.
I might go with the old dog for the hard road, Rory Gallagher, puke football. Let's get them up to Division 2. Let's get these results in the bag like he did with Fermanagh. Derry, Conan was telling me an interesting player to look out for, Colin McGoldrick. He's Sean Leo McGoldrick's brother. He's 31. He's never played with the county. never really wanted
what
to.
What a story.
And Rory has coaxed him in. I can't wait to see this fella. He's meant to be, he scores heavily at club level.
Coleraine,
I think they are.
Okay.
He scores heavily at club level, so he'll be a very interesting one to come in with. In my head, I've never seen Colin McColdrick, but from how Conan described him to me, he's Sean Quigley. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. He's a heavy scorer, yeah. You know, left and right class, but maybe might not like that winter training, yeah. Whatever. Anyways,
Sean Quigley's also gone though as well, isn't he?
He's gone as well for Fermanagh. Yeah, he's definitely gone. I'm going to go Cork and Derry, lads, and I'm going to go Louth and Leitrim to go down. Chair.
I go with the two guys for the finalist, and for relegation, I'm just unsure. I certainly fancy Fermanagh to they'll be fine, you know. Derry will certainly push. They'll be negative, but they'll get points on the board and they'll push towards the final. The other teams, it's a toss up for me between a lot of them, and I won't guess just now.
Interesting. If Longford were full strength, I would tip them to come up.
Yeah,
they did really well last year without the Mullinahakta players.
Probably ahead of Derry, but just given the missing contingent as you mentioned there. So I say Cork, and I just think teams are going to struggle against Rory Ball in Division 3. So I actually fancy them to make it and to go down Leitrim and Louth. Just based on kind of their season went into free fall last year towards the end of the championship. As you said, they're missing Andy McDonald, so that's not based on a lot of evidence recently. But yeah, that'd be my call.
Look, listen, lads, they're not easy predictions when you go down the league, yeah. Down to Division 4 now, lads. So it's a toss up.
Fox all down.
Carlow for me to go up, even though they've lost their former coach, whose name escapes me at the moment. I can't remember what his name was.
Poachers,
maybe that was it. Yeah. They have Stephen O'Mara, who does a lot of statistics and stuff, Jerry. You probably came across him. You know that grassroots football. Mm-hmm. He used to do good analysis pieces on the Dublin Club Football. He's their new coach. So Carlow for me to go up. And again, it's a toss up who could go up with him. Sligo are on a 13 game losing run. You'd imagine they should go back up, and they've lost Niall Murphy, who's by far and away their best player. So I don't know what the morale like is in there. Limerick seem to be on a much better trajectory. They won the McGrath Cup. It's a big deal for them. They beat Tipperary in the championship. They went away to Westmeath then and weren't disgraced. That was a close game up until Westmeath won it by 6 in the end. I think they could potentially go up. Davy Burke's Wicklow have a lot of lads missing as well. Conor McGrainer, Theo Smith, Patrick O'Connor. These lads, I don't think they're at full strength. I'm going to go for Carlow and Limerick to go up. Chair.
I'm going to go with...
See, these Dubs don't know the lower divisions. Yeah, lower divisions. Imagine, what's Division 4 like?
I actually remember Peter Caffrey was the manager, and we played a Division 2 league game against Limerick in the park.
But they were very good back in the noughties, yeah, there, weren't they?
Yeah, they were decent enough now. I think we lost that game. But with Limerick winning the McGrath Cup and a bit of success in last season, if they can get a bit of momentum into the first couple of league games, you'd imagine that they would probably push on. Carlow, again, what's the manager's name? Sorry.
Turlough O'Brien, sorry.
Like, he's extremely successful guy. He's experienced now, and he knows the players quite well. He'll certainly be keen to get back up to Division 3, and he was a big, opponent to the Tier 2 coming in. So he'll be looking to get Carlow back up to Division 2 if it's at all possible. So I will go with Limerick and Carlow to get promoted.
What about you, Connor?
Just based on things having to get better for them eventually, I'll go for Sligo, give the Western lads a shout out. And just on what you said about Limerick, I think it's a good point having won the McGrath Cup. And they did have a good season for by their standards, I suppose, last year. So go with them too.
Yeah, Billy Lee, likeable enough manager. We need to get him onto the show because whenever he speaks, he seems to make sense to me. So hopefully we'll get him on during the league. Right, long show today. That's all we've time for. We'll be back on Monday with a review show. And obviously next Thursday again. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
Yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their houses for 10 years.